Hello and welcome everybody to The Thing I Love Most, show with myself, Noel Valbon. I'm joined once again by my regulars on the show, Mr. Tim Leonard, all the way for NYC. How are we doing, Tim?
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks, buddy. And then slightly closer to home, Mr. Lee Curtin. How are we doing, Lee?
Yeah, not bad, not bad.
Good, good. Welcome, welcome. Thanks for coming along. So, I mean, there's no other way, no other place to start, apart from let's talk about the game on Saturday. My overall thoughts were that I thought we were a bit lucky, to be honest. I've heard loads of sort of mixed reviews about it. Pochettino himself said that he thought we were the better team, but I just think if you look at the chances that they created, you know, that Lacazette chance, especially at the beginning of the second half, Lee, you were stood next to me in the game and we were like, you know, if that goes in, we're dead and buried. And that almost gave me a bit of confidence because it was two like that and we were thinking, right, if they keep on missing sitters, then, you know, that gives you a bit of confidence. I think also, at the end of the day, the game is about, you know, scoring goals. And if you haven't got the quality players to score the goals, then that's fair enough. Even if you did create the chances, you know, if you don't have a quality striker to score, then you don't deserve to win. So it's an interesting one for me. But and then obviously the fact that there was the penalty was offside, potentially. Obviously it was offside, but I've read that because Kane actually didn't interfere with the actual ball, because Mustafi pushed him before the action, then he's classed as not being offside. It's something really weird like that. I don't know if you guys have heard about that. Have you heard about that rule?
I saw that. That's the basic interpretation that I saw, is that he was fouled. He may have been in an offside position, but he was fouled before he was able to play the ball. So that means that he's not offside. So the foul takes precedence over the offside.
It's a bit of an echo going on here. Is that echo coming from your side?
No, I can hear echoing.
That might be you, Tim.
I don't know. I don't hear you echoing.
Oh, that's because we're going international. Okay, that sounds better now. Yeah, I think I'm not even sure if the linesman actually knew that, because he didn't. He obviously kept his flag down. Whether that looked like, because he was out of play, he looked like he was like a yard short of the line, which obviously all of the pundits mentioned on Match of the Day and on BT Sport. But you know, at the end of the day, none of them seemed to know this rule. So why is that rule suddenly now coming out? But no one else seemed to be talking about it. None of them were talking about it. And you would have thought they have researchers that know these things. No, do you not think, Lee?
Well, it's the offside rule, ever since it first started changing. And it's, you know, you've gone from like phase one to phase two to interfering to not interfering. I think there's even officials who are a little bit unsure about it. And the only reason he didn't put his flag up on Saturday was, as you point out, he was behind the play and that line moved too quick for him. And so ultimately Kane's allowed to move towards the ball. It's if he jumps to head it, then he becomes offside. So because he was fouled before he could jump, technically it is a penalty, as it would be with a corner. If you pull somebody down before the corner comes across, it's a penalty. You don't have to wait for the corner to be struck. You know, you pull somebody down, the referee can just point to the spot and give a penalty. But again, it's one of these that you may well see a bit more of now towards the end of the season, as I think more officials will try and use it to kind of support their evidence when they're unsure.
But a lot of the time, I mean, this was doing the rounds basically, and on like my WhatsApps and stuff. And I would have thought that there would have been a researcher somewhere that normally they come out with these kind of things. And the time they had to deal with that for Match of the Day, you would have definitely thought they would have somehow realised, because it's an FA rule.
Yeah, but you say that, and they only pulled it up on Sky Sports News this morning with Mike Dean. And even when they read it, Mike Dean's initial response to clarifying it goes, well, basically, in a nutshell, it is bloody, bloody, blah. So it's one of those where I'm thinking Mike Dean isn't even 100% sure. You know, so it will always boil down to interpretation. You know, and I think it's just it's like the old rule, isn't it? If they're on the pitch, they're interfering, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I would have hated to have obviously lost the opportunity to score the penalty, but you know, the opposition side of things, you know, if the referee's allowing that, that's going to annoy me, because he was interfering with play. Even if he was, if the foul didn't happen, he would have got called offside. Yeah. So that shouldn't really change. But obviously, I'm, you know, I'm very, very happy that it did, because, yeah, it did get us out of jail. And at the end of the day, as I said before, you've got to take your chances. They gave him a chance at the end, and then he didn't take it. So it was a tale of two strikers in the end. One who's on form, and one who's deadly, and then the other one who's not on form, who definitely didn't like he wanted to take it. I mean, he was stony-faced before he... I mean, it wasn't even like he was trying to concentrate. He was absolutely bricking himself. Like, you know, he did not want to take that penalty.
Yeah, no, I think maybe... way. I think maybe the fact that he actually cheated might have had something to do with it, because he certainly wasn't fucking tripped. Excuse me, French, but he wasn't tripped. He just went down like a sack.
Yeah.
So, yeah, nah, justice in the end, karma from that point.
Just, you say justice, and I agree with you. However, in this day and age, if you are stupid enough, as Sanchez was, to get tight to a player, it happens all over the pitch, and they just go down. They win the free kick. You know, and they win the penalties. Like, it doesn't matter if he did it, if he cheated. I mean, it obviously does, but, you know, it was really stupid play from Sanchez to get tight to him. He had no reason to get tight to him like that. And if you do go close, you do run the risk of making contact. And even if he feels anything on his back, on his calf, whatever, he's going to go down. It's the last minute of the derby. You know, we would want Lamela or whoever to do that for us. So, you know, I think Sanchez just should have stayed away. And just, you know, hopefully just blocked it out, and maybe we would have conceded a corner. But I mean, it was crazy. So let's talk about the game as a whole then. Obviously, Sanchez was involved in the first goal conceding. He didn't have the best of game. Formation wise, we started with wing backs and a back three. They didn't start with two up top, which maybe, do you think that shocked Pochettino? Do you think that's what he was maybe thinking? Why he went for three at the back? Because obviously when we played him in the away game back at the Emirates, there was a loads of different formation changes in that game on both sides to try and counteract what each other was doing. And I felt also that he didn't really win the tactical battle, I think, Pochettino, with this game. I think once that he realised it was only Lacazette up top, he maybe could have changed things. I don't know. What do you think, Tim?
Well, I mean, he probably should have. If Arsenal's going to come at him with a formation he maybe wasn't expecting, then it's up to Potts to make that adjustment as quickly as possible, because you have to counteract that. And to wait, I don't know what the wait was for, because like I said, if you're expecting them to play one way and you're setting up your formation to play them that way, and then they don't play that way, well, what good is your formation?
Well, he ended up going with a back four in the second half, didn't he? He swapped things around. He put Rose in midfield. So it did eventually happen. But by that stage, you know, it was like, you know, 60, 70 minutes gone in the game. And so it was a little bit different scenario. But I did find it quite strange, because you didn't really need to have those three centre-backs back there. And no. we then lost control of the midfield, especially without Winks in there. I felt Winks was a massive loss in that game. I really... You know, there was just like the centre backs had the ball. They were the playmakers. They were the quarterbacks. But you know, they're not creative. And you know, that's not their job really. So they were just like flicking long balls to the wing backs who had space, because it was all quite central. But they just didn't really do enough. So it was quite a strange one, I thought, tactically and formation wise, how it started off. Lee, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think in terms of the changes, or in terms of the personnel, It's we could start with a three, but when you look at the three that are at the back, we have the ability for any of them. We have the personnel to change formation with them on the pitch and not make a substitution. We're not asking him to make a substitution. No. You know, Jan could easily slide forward into anywhere across that midfield. He could sit in the middle of the two, or he could go out left. And as we've seen as the game progressed, Rose came into the middle. And, you know, you could have had Rose in the middle and Jan on the left, you know, if need be. So we wouldn't have even had to change personnel. But he seemed quite, I think it was one of those where I felt he'd worked on it and he just wanted to persist with it, go with it.
Makes, you know,
it a couple of hours on the training ground. But, you know, I'm one of these fans. I'm more of the thought process. I like to see reaction sometimes and put yourselves on the front foot. If you've kind of got it in your head, that's how they're going to come at you. And they don't. You know, there's nothing wrong with changing 20 minutes into the game. Take the initiative. You know, that's what you got to do sometimes. You got to be a little bit brave and take the initiative. And sometimes we're a bit slow doing that. And it always, you know, and that's always seems to be us and old Pochettino. But credit to him in the second half. He's made a couple of changes, and Rose has stepped in there. And so we've had a go. And I think after we scored about 16 or 20 minutes, whatever was left, we probably looked like we could have nicked it. It could have gone our way.
Yeah.
I know there was nothing clear cut, but in terms of actually bossing the possession and moving them around, I mean, they were happy. Let's make no bones about it. They parked a coach for a little while during that game. Once they nicked that first goal, they did try and counter us, and they weren't obvious counters, Noel, but as you know, as we point out, they did miss two good sitters, which you know, so it kind of looks like it's a counter argument, but their counter attacks weren't that great. You know, they just happened to have two good chances on the end of them, and that was it. That was almost their lot. So we missed out on it. We missed a chance, I think. We weren't particularly sharp. We weren't at the races ourselves massively. Again, we was there. Sissoko was the engine. He was the kind of one player along with Kane that showed a little bit of heart and effort. But as I said to you on the day, you know, you get Sissoko in those positions, he will carry the ball for you 80 yards and put himself in the most dangerous position, but doesn't have the technical ability to finish it. And whether it would be a pass, whether it be a shot. And that's just where we kind of come up short. So you want to give everybody else, you want to give the other eight or nine his heart and, you know, his drive sometimes.
To be fair to him, though, that shot after the Eriksen shot, that rebound, that was a decent strike. To keep that down on the half volley, I mean, it was an amazing save by Leno, you know. So you got to give him some credit for keeping it on target, because, you know, you wouldn't necessarily have thought that. It was a hard shot to hit.
It was. I mean, at the time, I thought he should have chucked everything at it, you know, laces, head down, laces. But when you see the replays of it, he adapted his body quite well to, you know, as you say, put the shot back on target. So, you know, credit to him. And, you know,
from me, wow.
Hey, listen, we go back to one of the first shows this season. I said, let's keep Mo Sissoko. I said we need him in our squad to get us through this season. And you know, it's come to fruition. So fair play to him. I do want him to score, and I'd love to have scored on Saturday. I probably would have legged it around the pitch and got chucked out of him. But listen, if the other nine or ten at times had his heart and put everything into it, you know, we would see maybe that little level that we're missing at the moment, because we are a bit flat. But I think
we are a bit flat, and that's sort of what I was going to come on to in a minute in terms of, like, you know, we were lucky, I thought, you know, overall. And so that chance was one of the clear-cut chances that we did have. It was the Eriksen volley that was missed. Again, he was quiet. He seems to just be fleeting in and out of games now. Is he missing Dele Alli? Has his head been turned? Like, you know, there seems to be all these different rumours and, you know, these hypotheses as to why. But he does sometimes have these, like, poor run of forms. He has in most seasons, to be honest. And so is he just in a rut, you think, Tim?
I don't know. It's totally perplexing to me, because this Eriksen is a guy who he does, when he's on, he does so much for the club. And he really can just make things happen and kind of be the puppet master and pull the strings and, you know, direct the offense and make things happen. And it really has been a while since he was that player. I mean, we're talking more than a month now, if not closing on two. And obviously he misses Dele Alli, but Dele hasn't been around for weeks. So why hasn't an adjustment been made? And why hasn't he maybe stepped up and been maybe more aggressive? I would like to see Eriksen be a little more aggressive and to try to, you know, kind of make up for Dele being out, depending on, you know, whoever is playing that spot, but especially if it's Lamella, because to be honest, I'm not sure I trust Lamella anymore. But, you know, I mean, I would like to see Eriksen kind of try to impose his will a little bit more, as opposed to he likes to seem to let the game come to him and then react from that. I would like to see him try to be maybe more aggressive, especially tomorrow, because, you know, I mean, who knows what's going to happen tomorrow? You know, I don't want to get into it too early, but again, I would like to see Eriksson just kind of put his stamp more on the game and not wait until it comes to him, but actually be more proactive and aggressive.
I think the thing is when he ticks, we tick. I think, you know, that's right. That's evident. You know, he is the fulcrum, and he so much comes off him creatively, and especially if you haven't got Winks in there, and especially if you haven't got Ellie in there, you know, he's the one who should be demanding the ball. He should be the one who is basically directing play and putting those passes in. I mean, he did score against Leicester, and he got an assist against Leicester, but he still is the same old Eriksson. We haven't seen the same old Eriksson in quite a while, and it's a worry for me because we do rely on him so heavily in that role. We don't have anyone else that does that. And that's an issue for me in terms of, you know, if he does get injured or if he does continue this run of form, then, you know, we don't have anyone else like that. And so that's concerning, I think. And especially if he does, you know, the rumours are that he might be going to Real Madrid or whatever it is. You know, we don't talk about rumours on this show, but, you know, if he does potentially go, then we are going to be missing out on one of our main creative sources, which is surely a concern, no, Lee?
Yeah, a massive concern. It would be a massive concern. But I was speaking to Matt, who's obviously part of the crew as well. And I was saying, I'm looking at that team. I think, and I know Spurs fans don't want to hear it, but I think we won't have Eriksson next season. I
tend to agree.
Yeah, I don't think we will have him next season. And Joe, when I look at it, you're absolutely right earlier when you're talking about he goes through these phases throughout the season where the kind of game's passing by. And somehow, some way, these games have been passing him by when we haven't had Dele on the pitch, when we haven't had Harry on the pitch. You know, don't get me wrong, I'm not here hammering him at all. You know, I love watching him. When he plays, and you're absolutely right. When he ticks, we all tick. And watching him, he hasn't, if you're truly, truly world-class in that position, you can go and grab the game by the scruff of the neck at any time and create at least two or three chances. Now, if they fall into Llorente, who's blazing them over the bar, or they fall into Sissoko, who's dragging them wide at the post, you know, nobody can criticise you for not creating them. But I think if we look in the last couple of games, that's gone out of the game. He's just not even creating anything. So it's a bit more than just passing him by, because he won't put a tackle in. You know, he's not the one who's going to go track him back. You know, so the game is passing him by, and that has to be, you know, for the other 10 players, the other 9 outfield players, that's got to become a concern at some point. But I genuinely do think that we will lose him at the end of the season, and we're going to have to look to transform anyway, because I think we go into next season and we don't have Toby, and we don't have Eriksson. And I think they will be our two. I think they'll be the two players that go out the door. And I'm looking at Sanchez, and you've seen the naivety of Sanchez. His play is still there. You know, that header should never have happened. Their goal shouldn't have come to, you know, again, giving teams head starts, and games don't come bigger than that. That shouldn't happen. You know, you just want him to be horrible there, don't you? You just want him to come through and actually just volley that ball. I don't know why he's heading it so low down anyway, but, you know, just volley it back up and out for a goal kick if you want to. The fans don't mind. 16 minutes into a North London derby, they'll go, you know, you get one of the biggest cheers of the day. So that's what you do there. So you still see the naivety of him. And we need to get used to that a little bit, because he's going to be the one that we're calling for next season to be stood next to Toby, stood next to Jan. If Toby goes, you know, because I for one would have him over Foyth anyway, because he just has the physical presence and the pace to bail him out a bit more. And then I think next season becomes a big one, because who do you get in to replace an Eriksson? You know, when you look around you, we've got Winks who can get on the ball and pass it. And to be fair to Harry Winks, he's probably puts himself forward a lot more than Eriksson when it says to somebody, say, give me the ball, I'll try and make a pass.
Oh, definitely, 100%. He's become that player this season. He really, really has. And I think that was more than evident in his absence on Saturday, because, you know, there wasn't that person taking the ball off the centre-backs. You know, it was Wanyama, who I thought had a poor game, and looked like he was just like half asleep and just unfit and you know, yep. I don't know why he was...
Here's one for you both. Do you not think... I looked at it a few times. Do you not think if Sissoko was standing where Wanyama was, that Ramsey would have got to the goal. I don't think he would have.
Yeah, quite possibly.
What Wanyama looked like is running with a parachute on his back, and it was only 16 minutes into the game.
Yeah, I didn't look fit.
He didn't look fit. So you know, we're making big calls in. We make. But then
the other option was like you know, skip. You know, in terms of he's not got experience, but you know, you could have changed it around a little bit. Could have, I suppose, put Davies centre back and Rose in centre mid and Vertonghen on the left. But I think you know, it's we're a bit short in that department. Obviously, with Dembele going, so you know, I think it's a tough one. And obviously, Wanyama, he hasn't been informed for a long time. But he, you know, I remember 2 years ago in the derby at White Hart Lane, he was the man of the match. You know, he was incredible. But he's just, you know, he's not at that level anymore.
I think injuries have killed him. Yeah. Injuries have simply killed his season.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, overall, then, man of match for me, I thought was Sissoko. I thought he was good. I thought he was the engine, as you were saying, Lee. But it was disappointing. And we're going to come on and talk to Dortmund in it about Dortmund in a second. But I think overall, we should be thankful that we got out of jail.
Yeah, we're still in the driving seat. You know, we're still in the driving seat. If we're chasing third. You know, we're still in the driving seat. If we was to go and match everybody else behind us or better everyone behind us, we finish third. And I think a lot of Tottenham fans need to recognise that, because I think if you hand on your heart and you know your football, we don't have the third best squad in that league. So, you know, look around, look at what's been done. And you know, and as I say all the time, get behind them. Doesn't matter if we're going through a bit of a difficult patch. Every team will go through a difficult patch this season. And we got to stay behind them, keep pushing them on. Delhi's due back soon, and we'll maybe just get that other spark and finish strong. So, you know, onwards and upwards.
Yeah, I can only agree with that. You know what? I saw a statistic a couple of weeks ago when you say that maybe we're not the third best team in the league, but we have the third most goals in the league and we've conceded the third fewest goals in the league. So maybe we are the third best team in the league. And you know what? There's no what shame is there in that for a team that or a club that has made no additions in the last year is still basically playing all of their games on the road since, you know, I mean, yes, Wembley has kind of become our de facto home, but we haven't played a real home match now in two seasons. Is it really so bad that Spurs is still a top four team?
That's definitely not a bad thing.
I'm not going to say I'm thrilled, but I'm still pretty happy. We shouldn't have supporters complaining about what's been happening with this club for the past few years, not even a couple of years. But I do also think, though, going into the new building, whenever this is, I mean, there's a rumor going around now, it might be next month, but you know, but that rumor's been going on for how many months now? You know, when I covered the New York Red Bulls, they were supposedly building a stadium for 7 years, and it was always 30 to 60 days away. But I'm looking at it as, what next year is going to bring. And I really do think, you know, sales aside, whether Eriksen leaves or stays, I really do think there's going to be an investment this season. And I think the club and Levy and the people who control the purse strings, I think they're going to want to make a splash in that first season or the first two seasons in the new building. And I think that's going to be the motivation for the investment this summer. And I hope I'm right, but I kind of think that that's the plan.
I hope you're right as well, Tim. I hope you're right as well. Okay, so it's time now to preview the Dortmund game, which is on Tuesday evening. We're in a very, very strange position to be 3-0 up from the first leg. I don't think anyone thought it was going to happen. I certainly didn't, especially after the first half in the first leg. I would have gladly taken 0-0. I was very, very worried. But then we did come out and performed amazingly well in the second half and managed to get a 3-0 lead. So that puts us in a great position. Obviously, away goals do count in this competition. So if we did get a goal, then they would have to get five. So, you know, and I always fancy us to score in any game. I always do. And it's only been recently, I think the Chelsea game was that we didn't. I think Man City this season as well. So it's, you know, we're pretty potent. So I'm confident that we will get a goal out there. So I'm still confident that we're going to go through overall. But saying that, you know, if we do make the kind of defensive mistakes that we have been doing this season, in the first 20 minutes or so, it may go, you know, there's a worry for me. But I still, like I said, overall, I think we're going to score. I think that's the main thing. But, and I can't see them getting fired. But I mean, you know, I mean, Sanchez's two mistakes at the weekend are just, it's just evident. Trippier's mistakes the other day as well, you know, against Chelsea. These are like catastrophic errors that you can't have in big games. And they seem to be coming part and parcel. And that's the most worrying thing for me. We used to be defensively so solid. You know, we used to really, really be rock. And something has changed. And I don't even know what it is. So let's just talk about the game. And obviously, do you think he's going to tell them to sit back? Or do you think he's just going to say, play your game, try and get a goal, play normally?
Well, I think we sat back a little bit in the first game at the start. And then I think we realised that we probably gave them too much space. We gave them too much space and we gave them too much respect. So I think we probably will go into that game the way we did at Wembley. However, minus the respect and minus the space. I'd like to think that's the case anyway. I don't see any reason to change the way we set up. I think I'd set up exactly the same. But I would make sure that we're on the ball a little bit more in terms of, you know, shutting them down. I wouldn't be giving Sancho that much space to build up a head of steam when he's got the ball. You know, I'd be ensuring that I'm doing coaching sessions today, tomorrow morning, on shutting the space down while the ball's travelling towards him. Don't let him have that second touch. First touch, second touch, and he's next minute he's standing you up and running at you. That's where all the bother came from. And like I said in the previous show, at 19, he looked to be their main outlet for that particular game. So you can tell they've done their homework, and you can tell that, you know, at the back, we're not the quickest. So they will look to do us for pace, I think. And so we need to be on the ball there. But I would set up exactly the same and just make sure that we're shutting them down quicker. So I'd probably pack out the midfield a little bit more in terms of the way we move it across the pitch together.
So if Winks is fit, he's in there with Sissoko. And then obviously at the back, would you go for the three centre-backs that started against Arsenal? Would you bring Foyth back in? Obviously, he was the one who started the Dortmund game at home. And then we had Vertonghen was the left wing back. What would you, play in terms of?
I'm going Davies.
Wing back.
I'd go Rose as the wing back, and I'd go Davies, Jan and Toby as the three. I'd leave Sanchez in for pace. Sorry.
Okay.
But if I had to have a three, I'd be happy to bring Davies in, and I'd go Jan on the outside again if Rose came on and make the impact change, you know, in terms of giving his legs, it's possible, but. I'd probably go as we were. I'd probably go with Rose and then maybe the three that we seen on Saturday. And I think he's going to change, you know. I think he'll go Aurier on the right.
Yeah, well, Trippier hasn't travelled, so.
Oh, he hasn't?
No.
Okay. So I think he'll go Aurier on the right.
Dier potentially could come in as well. I mean, if Winks isn't fit, then that surely has got to be the sub. So he has travelled.
He's travelled.
That's good news. I'm glad he's back on the scene, actually.
Yeah. What are you thinking, Tim?
I know that after the first leg, I know you guys were not real happy with me when I said we're definitely in the quarterfinals. And after the last three matches, I'm starting to get a little nervous. even with the 3-0 lead. You know, what I would love to see is for the lads to score in the opening 15 minutes, and if they do that, the game, it's all over. But I think we all know that that's not going to happen.
Hang on a minute.
The thing that got me nervous is if Dortmund scores two goals, and then it's what do you call it over there? Squeaky bum time, I think.
Yeah, we have that. Yeah,
That's my concern, is that Dortmund gets two and then we start running around and just scrambling and just kicking the ball away and just completely get away from our game. But what I would like to see, I would love to see Mora play this game. I think that he brings a certain level of ball control that I would like to see us have against Dortmund. I would love to see Sonny in there as well. I almost, if I'm Poch, I have to give consideration to not starting Eriksen and bringing him in off the bench, because like we've been saying, he really hasn't played very well in the last month and a half or so. Mm-hmm. So do you keep putting him out there just because he's supposed to be one of your best players, or do you actually react to how he actually has played in these last six or so weeks?
He's very rarely done that, though, hasn't he, in his time?
Right.
You know, he's very rarely dropped players on form, because they normally do. And Eriksen, you know, has done this in the past. They do normally come good. And so, you know, you lose rhythm and within the team. But I know what you're saying. And obviously, we are very lucky. We talk about our squad. We are lucky the fact that we do have, you know, Mora and Lamela, who can come on and or could even start. And they're different types of players to Eriksen, though. I think that would be the thing for me in terms of, like, you know, set pieces. If Trippier is not on the pitch, which he's not travelled, so you need someone who's going to take set pieces. And obviously, he's not been amazing at those, but still, he's one of the people who you would want to be taking the set pieces. So, you know, he is the creative drive, so to speak. And I think if you put Mora in instead of Eriksen, it would be quite a different game, I think, quite a different system that we'd have to play. So, I can't see that myself, but I'm hoping Mora does get some time, because he's done well in the few games when he's played in the Champions League. And I think he also just needs a bit of running the team, really. You know, he was very unlucky with that volley in the first half.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if that gone, then it would have been a quite a different story, I think. So, it's going to be an interesting one. So obviously, we're not, you know, doomsday merchants. We're not saying we're going to lose at all.
I think it's going to be a little nerve wracking.
It definitely will be. It's also my birthday as well, so I'm hoping they're going to give me a little birthday present. So, fingers crossed. And a goal in the first 15 minutes, that would be sensational. So in terms of predictions, what are we thinking then? Tell me your scores, lads. Tell me your scores.
Really?
Yes, really.
Yeah, all right. Got to go 2-2.
2-2. Okay, good.
Got to go 2-2.
I like it. Nice and positive. Okay. I can certainly see that happening, to be honest, thinking about it in my head now. You know, defensively, they are far from great. And, you know, they lost at the weekend. You know, they're not in a great run of form. So, yeah, I mean, I can see 2-2. Tim?
I can see 2-1 for them.
Yeah, okay.
And sounds like my still prediction. Get through, so...
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. Okay, yeah. Well, I'm obviously going to go for 2-1. I don't agree with you. It's now quite boring, actually, at the moment. But, yeah, I'm actually going for 2-1 the other way. So, I do think we'll also... we'll also lose. Oh, I might even go 1-1, you know. Cheeky 1-1. No, 2-1. I'm going to say 2-1 Dortmund as well. So, but yeah, fingers crossed. It is just that. And then we do get through. And then on to the quarterfinals, whoever it may be. I can't wait for another European away day. So fingers crossed. We do get ourselves over the line. So, yeah, oh, let's do it, boys. Okay, so it's time to preview our next league game, which is away at Southampton. So they started to hit a bit of form. They were quite unlucky at last weekend against Man United, but they're looking okay. So we're not really playing at them in the best of times, which is just standard. It always seems to happen this way. So I'm losing all confidence in the team. This is not good. I'm not normally like this. I'm quite a positive person. And I always predict a 2-1 victory, apart from Dortmund. But I'm just not sure about this game for me. This just sounds alarm bells to me. There's something about this fixture that I'm not massively looking forward to. And I just don't know. I just don't know. Obviously, as usual, we know that we can score in any game. And we always say that. But we need to start getting back to that form where we're really peppering the goal. And we haven't done that for quite a while. And so that concerns me. I think also we will benefit from hopefully having a positive result on Tuesday. I think if we do go through, I think that the club will be lifted, and we will go there with a better frame of mind. And obviously we're pretty likely to do that. Even if we do lose the game, if we still go through, it should, you know, give us a lift. And fingers crossed, if we obviously put in a good performance, even more so. So I think it's an interesting one. In terms of sort of like the game itself, I think I'm just going to go for a draw. Is that really bad? I'm going to go 1-1. Oh, no. All right, what are you saying, Tim? Are you going to go for a win, you crazy cat?
We're talking Southampton, right?
We're talking Southampton, yeah.
I'm going to be bold like I was last week when I got the score right for Arsenal.
And we don't 4-0. We don't talk about if people get scores right on this show, because people forget quite easily. I can't even remember. I did that at the beginning of the season, and then it was like, they were like, nah, forget it. So what are we doing? What?
4-0.
4-0?
This is the game where we get our we get it back. I'm giving Harry Kane a hat trick. 4-0.
Since when has cannabis been legal in New York State?
For a little while now.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Oof. That is some wacky backy you've been smoking. Fantastic. Okay. Good to know. All right then, Lee, what are you saying?
I'm gonna go for a 2-0 victory.
Good. Okay.
I think.
Oh,
I think you're
bringing my positive activity up here.
He's gone right in the middle.
Yeah. Listen, I think it's one of those games. It's that we always have a bit of a battle against them. We all seem to make hard work of them. But then in recent times as well, it's either been a hard victory by the odd goal, or in recent times we just go and give them a bit of a slapping, like Tim's alluded to just there. So. I think we come out of Europe one way or another with the, whether it's a win, draw or lose during the week, but we go through. It's all eyes has to be on that game, because with the pack closing in behind us and then Liverpool the game after, we need to make sure we post 3 points up on that board, come rain or shine. And if we do that, we then go into the next stage of the season in a very, very good place. And I think the guys know that. I think Poch knows that. Just judging by the way he's chucked Wanyama and a few others back in there, I think he's bought a bit of time for some of the other players. I think we've missed Dyer. I know we can talk about that another time, but I do genuinely think we missed him. And I know he's not everyone's cup of tea, but he's got the know-how. He's got the nous. He's got that little bit of needle in him, and he can do it the right way, not the Lamella way. He's not always so obvious about it. I think we do them 2-0. I believe it's a massive game. I think it's very, very important just to break this little rut that we're coming out of in the league, and to set ourselves up for that home stretch of the final 8 games.
Well, I'm loving your positivity, guys. And yeah, hopefully it will rub off on me. And maybe tomorrow night, you know, when we do, obviously, you know, because this is recorded before the Dortmund game. Fingers crossed, everything is going to go well, and then that will continue on to Saturday. So, yeah, who knows? But so that's great. 4-0 and 2-0, and I'm going for a 1-0. Oh, come on, Noel. Obviously, if we play well, I just don't know where it's coming from at the moment. I just don't know. I just don't know where it is. There's something's missing. But it will come. The players haven't suddenly turned into like rubbish players. You know, these are the same team that won 6-2 away Everton, you know, and Bournemouth 5-0. You know, I completely get that. I'm not stupid enough to suddenly think that, you know, we're going to go throughout the season without winning another game. But I just think that Southampton are in a decent bit of form, and they're playing okay, and probably playing us at a good time. So it may well depend on the Dortmund game, how this result goes. So we shall see. Okay, cool. Well, that is Saturday. So now it's time to answer some of your questions that you guys have been sending in. So thank you very much for doing that. So let's first have a look at this question. Where are we? So we put something on Instagram earlier on, and we got some good questions coming in. So let's just check. I think they might have been sent to my... There we go. Okay, so... question from Josh Cowan. Hi, Josh. Thanks for listening and watching. What happens if we lose the first game at the new stadium? Well, we'll be effing gutted if that's the case. Fingers crossed that's not going to be the case. is looking quite likely now, it seems, that the sort of the tide has turned from it not looking like this season. It's looking like it is maybe likely this season, and it's looking like it might be the Huddersfield game. But people don't really know what's going on. It depends if Brighton go through against Millwall in the FA Cup, and it does still mean what happens with the tests. They've got two test events. They need to go well. So it's all very much don't believe what you say because no one knows anything. So it's not like they can arrange it to be the Brighton match or the Huddersfield match because they can't. It's what they're planning for, ideally, because they do want to get in there this season. But if it goes any later than that, then it will be next season, basically. So, let's not talk about that, Josh. Let's try not to avoid negativity too soon. But yeah, fingers crossed. What will happen is we will be very, 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 very angry. Okay, so do you think we can win the Champions League? Tim, over to you.
Do I think we can win it? Sure, yes. Why not? Anybody can win it. Do I think we will win it? Obviously, things need to change from where they are right now, but anything is possible. I mean, when you look at our history, last year we beat Real Madrid. This year we had the draw with Barcelona at Barcelona when we desperately needed some sort of result there to move on. I don't think it's impossible, and I think if the team rediscovers its form, if Liverpool made the final last year, why can't Tottenham make the final? That's the way I look at it. I'm not sitting here. I would never presume to predict that. Yes, absolutely, Spurs are going to win the Champions League, because let's face it, it would be a little bit ridiculous to predict that with teams that are spending half a billion pounds on players. But is it possible that the club could put itself in position to even get to the final? Why not? I don't have any issues with saying that and putting our club up against any club that's still left in the competition. But, I mean, for any of these teams, they're all great teams. It's a coin flip.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Good answer. And I am in agreement. I think at the end of the day, when it comes down to this end of the competition, then you do need a bit of luck and you do need to be able to have, the ability to score. But I think, the key is just ironing out those mistakes as we've been seeing. But if we do, then who knows? Who knows? this is quite, it's quite funny. This isn't even a question. This is, that question was from Vineyard K, Vineyard K95. So thanks for that. This is from Dipen Wagella. Hi, Dipen. Thanks for listening and watching. Eriksen is the ittiest player when it comes to defending. That's not even a question. That's just a statement. He's just having a go at poor Christian, which we also have been doing early on in this show. But that's quite funny. That is quite funny.
Constructively, we may.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's hilarious.
Let me ask you guys a question, because okay, I'm curious as to what. Obviously, I don't live there, and my reaction is, or my knowledge of what happens locally is limited. What would happen? What would be the reaction in the UK overall if Spurs were to win the Champions League, but we haven't won a domestic title a league title? Let's say we've never won the Premier League. What would be the reaction, do you think? If Spurs were to manage to win the Champions League, but not win the Premier League,
I think it would just be as much as if we were to win the Premier League. I think they're almost equal in terms of their sort of stature and status. And I think, that it would go down very well. But I don't know. It just seems that the English media don't really get behind us as much as other teams.
It just seems
that way. So in terms of the overall reaction, I don't know. If you look at how the Liverpool team have been doing since they were top of the league, and the people that we're referred to as, being the don't like to call it to speak about myself, but we're referred to as being bottlers by some outlets and fans and whatever.
Yes.
But we were never top of the league in any of those seasons where we supposedly bottled it. We weren't there. They were there. They were clear. And they've been drawing. And, it's crazy that that's not spoken about. It's, it's just crazy. So I think
I've been speaking about that on my radio show here. For the last 3 weeks on my radio show here, I've used the phrase "bottlers" with Liverpool. I'm using that extensively. Though,
but you don't, that's not. It's not. It's not. It's. They're still up there as being quite. Well, they're not that not favourites anymore, obviously. But you know, there's not. It's just not the same. It's an interesting one. Okay, so a question from Harrison Edson for you, Lee. Do you think Bamiyang bottled his penalty?
How do you want me to answer that? No, well,
With better language than he did earlier on.
Yeah, sorry about that. He definitely bottled it. His nerve went. And as you said, Noel, when you see the camera zoom into his face, the colour had almost drained from it. He looked nervous, and it's one of those. I think maybe when you go, you know, you're going up against somebody who kind of looks like Hugo had his number from the get go, and we've never fought that in the past. He definitely bottled it. He definitely bottled it. I won't repeat what I said first time around, but
no, yeah, okay, thank you. And we were quite lucky. Obviously, you can see the replay that there was quite a lot of encroachment, and obviously that happens pretty much every penalty in the Premier League. But obviously the fact that Vertonghen then did sort of affect the play, it means it's a little bit more important. But at the end of the day, they were encroaching for Kane's penalty and obviously it went in. So it doesn't matter if you score the penalty because, you know, the players are behind the ball. So the thing to do is put the ball in the net and then shut up.
Yeah.
It's easy. It's quite simple.
That's why Arsene Croatman wasn't noticed.
Exactly. Encroachment is irrelevant if you score the penalty. So score the penalty and then just shut up. Cool. So thank you very much for those questions, guys. We do that every week on the show. So if there's anything that you would like to ask, then please do get in contact either on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. We are The Thing I Love Most Show. It's TTILM Show. On also YouTube as well. So if you are listening to us on a podcast form and you wanted to see us, we normally do Skype shows at the moment because we're too busy to get down to our pub, which is the Blue Coats pub in Tottenham. But fingers crossed, if we do make this move back to Tottenham in the near future, then we are going to be in that pub and we might even do match day broadcasts, and it's going to be so much more easy to actually have a bit of fun. And fingers crossed, we'll do some broadcasts from the stadium as well. So thanks very much for listening and watching. Big game tomorrow. Fingers crossed we're going to do what is required. And then on Saturday also get ourselves 3 more points. Very, very vital 3 points. So have a good week, everyone. Thanks again for watching and listening. And come on, you Spurs.